SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two at the races, and looking forward to this visit with Sid Fernando as we spent some time together at Churchill on Saturday. Delighted that Sid gave me a chance to talk to and meet Roger Lyons. And Sid, good morning. That was a fun afternoon.
Yeah, good morning, Steve. It was great to see you and Tina over there. Had a lot of fun, and I appreciate it. I lost the cufflink, and I just want to let the listeners know, Steve was a dervish trying to find it, upending couches, looking under chairs. Really appreciated that, Steve.
I felt terrible. I mean, that's a treasured keepsake, and I go nuts when I lose anything like that, especially in an environment like that. And for those that Sid had a cufflink, a presidential seal cufflink that was presented to him. I suppose. I don't know. Maybe you can get that in the White House gift shop, but I don't know.
No, you can't actually get this one. And the funny thing is, the people I was with upstairs in the Turf Club, when we were downstairs looking for it, I called them up, and they were on hands and knees looking for it. But you know what? It happens, and let's move on.
It was a nice, listen, this was a nice Breeders' Cup. I made the point all week leading in that it was really kind of an exercise in pure horseplay, frankly. It didn't have, all the marquee matchups and so forth and all of the headliners, certainly coming out of it, the Accelerate/Justify Horse of the Year story is going to be well told and flogged, but let's first get some feel, Sid, from your impressions, and also, of course, what it means to the various breeding operations and stallions that come out of it with marquee results.
One of the big beneficiaries, obviously, is Accelerate. He'd been offered prior, it was announced he was going to stud at Lane's End. This is a sire line, Smart Strike. Sire line, Smart Strike, of course, the sire of Looking at Lucky, the sire of Accelerate. Smart Strike was at Lane's End. Lane's End has had an affinity for this line. They had also stood briefly Smart Strike's champion turf horse, English Channel. So for Bill Farish, it was a opportunity at the time, months ago, whenever this was first kind of announced, they were offering shares in the horse, really pretty good package. I think it was $75,000 for the share. And that looks like fantastic value now, Steve, now that he won this race. In fact, I was just talking to some people on Twitter about this whole idea of, Horse of the Year Justify versus Accelerate. But regardless of what happens with Accelerate, he had a tremendous campaign. And, he's obviously going to go next in the Pegasus for a chance of a huge payday. Just like Gunrunner, and when he does go to stud, those people that bought shares in the horse, they're really going to reap some benefits because they got in at a very, very inexpensive and reasonable price point. So that's that's the story with him. Of course, several horses out of that race are going to stud. West Coast is retired. He's going to Lane's End as well. He was an Eclipse champion three-year-old. Mendelssohn, he'll go to Ashford. So City of Light, the Breeders' Cup mile winner, another great score for Lane's End, by the way. He's going there off a big victory at in the mile race. And as a son of Quality Road, he's the most well-qualified son of that very, very outstanding young stallion who's also at Lane's End, whose stud fee is going to be $150,000 this year, up from $70,000 last. So, yeah, there's lots of ramifications, lots of horses going to stud. Others will be around to compete next year as well.
What does this do for looking at Lucky, too?
Looking at Lucky, I think he's got a, I think his stud fee is still 17.5, which is great value. The thing is, Steve, if it had been from looking at Lucky's first crop, would have been huge. The fact that it's right now isn't going to move the needle as much. You'll probably get more mares, obviously, but once you're deep into several books, they don't move the needle as much. Excuse me, because there's been a phone call coming in. That's why if you heard
sure,
the,
no problem.
That's that story.
Well, there's also, and one thing could have happened that people made from this standpoint, from the stallion standpoint, Wowcat with a little better trip may very well have been in the picture in the distaff an hour earlier, and that would have been a headline. Looking at Lucky getting a classic and distaff winner, the same day, and of course Wildcat's success in the Southern Hemisphere part of this story.
Yeah, no, that's. I mean, it's always great. The same thing happened with Dialed In. Now, he's a younger horse, but Gunavera was second, and he had the other one run second in the sprint, a length and a half, and Dialed In, Darby Dan gets two, Breeders' Cup winners. It's funny how something like that can change. And of course, again, the younger you are, the bigger the impact.
What about we can talk about a stallion that that does get a first crop pop, and that would be Cross Traffic, right?
That's huge.
With Jaywalk.
Yeah, exactly. Now that's a great story right there, Steve. There've been a bunch of Unbridled Songs in the last few years of his career. Now at stud, we've talked about this before. He really hasn't had a major stallion son, but he's got a few coming up. Arrogate, of course, the biggest name, but Will Take Charge is running this year. He's done well, but with his first crop, but Leave It To one of the more inexpensive sons, Cross Traffic, who, by the way, was his first stakes win, I believe, was as a four-year-old, when he won the Whitney. Leave It To Him to come up with the Pro Tem champion two-year-old filly, first crop two-year-old, that's going to be pretty huge. Now, his stud fee was already announced at 15. It's quite likely the demand for him, there's going to be a big rush of mares to him right now. That likely will increase his stud fee during the season from the announce fee, possibly. You know,
already has. Already has. 25.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I didn't even see that. Yeah, there you go.
25.
Yeah, already. It's already pushed it up to 25. And, you know, I was trying to get a client to before the Breeders' Cup, to book a mare at 15, and he and his people decided not to. And, you know, it's a shame because they could have gotten in at 15 now. And, you know, who knows? Maybe the price will even go higher.
Well, and Jaywalk was already his first graded stake winner when it came to the Frisette, and then further enhances that with the juvenile fillies and the way, really, the way that she did it, eye opening.
Yeah.
And you know who? Obviously, Candy Ride doesn't need any gilding, but not only did Candy Ride get you know, another top juvenile during the Breeders' Cup with Game Winner, but on Sunday, if you haven't seen, I'll bring this. Well, that Vekoma, I mean, that is a serious horse, and George Weaver and you know his crazy as a rat in the coffee can owner Randy Hill. They're beside themselves. Matt Gatsis also partnered up on Vekoma, but there's another Candy Ride.
Yeah, it's, you know, Candy Ride's very, you know, extremely hot. Here's a horse that started off at Hillendale for John Sakura for $10,000. And, you know, he lost the horse afterwards to Lane's End when Marty Wygod bought a lot of the shares of the Craigs and had enough power to move him over to Lane's End. But this horse is just Argentine bred, and you know, started off the year, you'll recall, with the Gun Runner, ended with a Breeders' Cup winner, and you know, a plethora of recent stakes winners. He's just a very high class stallion, and just look at the sales results. I mean, look at Mastery, Gun Runner, Mastery, especially $25,000 stud fee at Claiborne. Another, you know, an undefeated 2-year-old who made only one start at 3 and retired with only 4 wins. But you know, he's been you know, setting lighting up some the board at Keeneland there with his first mares in full to him. Gun Runner as well. You know, there's there are a lot of Candy Rides still up and coming. Game Winner will go to stud, and he's going to have. Gary West told me that he's getting calls left and right for this horse too. So, a lot of breeding implications, Steve, from this Breeders' Cup, leading right into. You know, the first few days of the sales, first at Fazy Tipton, and now 2 days of Keeneland. But the big international flavor and presence carried over from the Breeders' Cup to the sales here. And, you know, you see a lot more European presence, European pedigrees, too, which is a trend we've been talking about for years.
Absolutely, and that over the course of the weekend, they're number one newspaper of record. And I asked you months ago about Lope de Vega, and Galileo gets a first big you know, North American success in Line of Duty. You know, obviously a horse like Sister Charlie, you know, has been winning races all, you know, all year since coming to North America. Nathaniel,
The another
sire of, yeah, absolutely. And you know who needs to be appreciated in absentia is City Zip. Bulletin, right? Bulletin with the win. Mm-hmm. And City Zip also in improbable, the Street Sense winner. And then in the sales ring on, was it Monday, Zepesa changes hands. I mean, City Zip, a little bit of a blue collar for a long time in his career, and getting a chance in the spotlight, post-mortem.
Yeah, he started off in New York for, $7,500, and then Ladies' End grabbed him, because he's obviously Ghost Zapper's half-brother, grabbed him during Ghost Zapper's big year, brought him over, and, started off a blue-collar origins, Doug Fee-wise level, but surprisingly got a wide range of horses, from dirt sprinters, which you'd expect of a City Zip, Carson City type of horse, to milers, to turf sprinters, turf routers. He got the whole game, and that turf element really was pretty big for him as well. So because of his ability to get a range of horses on distances, surfaces, ages, he really capitalized during this era that went from dirt to all weather to turf, and his presence is really missed.
Very much.
Yeah. His son Collected, by the way, will be going to stud at Airdrie, and that's going to be the last big, so far anyway, the big City Zip son. At a dinner I was at last night, Cormac Rutmack was there from Airdrie, and he showed me a picture of Collected, and he's a nice looking horse, and Barry Jones and his crew, Cormac, Ben, Barry's son, that brain trust, I think they really have a pretty serious stud prospect in him.
Well, it's certainly a horse that's a picture. I mean, is going to wow people when they get a chance to view him, and that really does feel like a classic Brary Jones gambit. City Zip.
Yeah.
Kind of a knuckle curveball stallion prospect, and Brary Jones has got a pretty good record with those types.
Yeah, he really does. His horses, as we've mentioned here, uniformly sell well. He's got a huge broodmare band, and they really match up those matings really well, pedigree-wise as well as physical matches, and they bring them out ready to fire right at the yearling sales, and, quite a few go on to become the real deal.
I got to mention one name, too, the story that I saw yesterday, and I don't know if it's – I'm sure – had to get some traction on the sales grounds, and that's the news of Daddy Longlegs going to TaylorMade.
Yeah. Scat Daddy's son. There's a big run on Scat Daddy, and so this horse is coming up, I think he's standing for $10,000. He was a legitimate racehorse, Right now, of the grade one winning sons of Scat Daddy, Coolmore controls them all. They've got, and of course, Steve, No Name Never, who Coolmore has at stud in Ireland, has just really turned it on with his first crop this year, has a group one winner from that crop. Just everything seems to be running. So that's the first sign that they've hit on a mother load. And, of course, they control all five group Northern Hemisphere Group 1 sons of Scat Daddy, from No Name Never, Caravaggio at stud, also at Coolmore, Mendelssohn going to stud, that's three. Then they have Sioux Nation, and there's another one as well that name escapes me right now, but there are five Group 1 winning sons, and Coolmore owns them all.
Well, and Daddy Long Legs, this is a fun story because it more or less follows what went on with Scat Daddy himself, and you know how Scat That's Daddy right. came down there and made a splash, and you know then at the same time his North American get were doing all kinds of things on both surfaces, and so now why not? And you know what's interesting too about this, Katie Rich, Phoenix, and TaylorMade. They all partnered up on this acquisition, that obviously has ramifications on the breeding side down the road, and then of course you know all three of those entities are going to be watching broodmare sales, what's going on right now, and what'll happen in the winter and into February. They'll probably be claiming some horses too, I'd imagine, they'll prime the pump on Daddy Longlegs.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be, basically they're allowing, this is a U.S. racehorse. They're giving opportunity here now for a horse's first crop, included a Group 1 winner in Chile, to come here and have access to another son of Scat Daddy, and there aren't that many access points, so it's a pretty smart move.
Sid, we got about 10 minutes, and I'd love to shift gears into the sale results. I also will throw out there two other stallion news items from the last couple of days. I'll have another, by the way, coming back to the U.S. He'll stand in California, and he basically came and went, and after the Triple Crown try, and of course didn't get a chance to run in the Belmont. And I saw that Warrior's Reward is on the move again, and he's going to Pennsylvania. The steady supply of top stallions to Pennsylvania and Maryland is a story unto itself. Let's talk about the sale. Start with Sunday night. Nicole Russo is going to join us in a little bit, Sid, and we're going to get some of the other backstories. But your impressions here, these first three sale days, Sunday night at Fasig Tipton and then Monday, Tuesday at Keeneland.
The idea, Fasig Tipton just collects, and they've been doing this, this November sale of theirs is just phenomenal, really just collecting top mares to sell, grade one winners, grade one producers, iconic types of mares. You saw the dam of California Chrome was there, just one of many in a sale that featured, of course, Lady Aurelia, selling for $7.5 million. Believe it or not, I actually thought she had a chance to go past the $9.5 million and make $10 million. From what I saw watching, because I was right in the back ring while she was going through, there was a Coolmore group on one side with Leslie Ward just standing with them. There was bidding taking place, and there was bidding on the phone. Boyd was taking bids on the phone, and it turned out that Boyd Browning, president of Fasig Tipton, was actually taking bids from Barbara Banky.
Right.
But I didn't see the Coolmore guys bid. Now, I don't know if they did or not, but that was kind of surprising. They would have had to have been in to push this horse past $10 million. Now, the way this game is, it's quite possible they're very savvy guys, and perhaps they understood that because Barbara Banky owned 2/3 of Lady Aurelia, she's buying, with a huge discount because all she's doing is buying out her 1/3 owner partner, Peter Liddell. So, in other words, for that $7.5 million price, she essentially just paid Peter Liddell $2.5 million for his third. So, it's tough for somebody to bid the full dollar against that discount. And you know, it's an interesting dynamic, but she ended up getting the her mare that she raised first in partnership with her, George Bolton, and Peter Lydell. Later, she bought out George Bolton and it had two-thirds ownership to one-third for Peter Lydell. And now in the sale, essentially what she did was buy out her partner.
Exactly. And then we saw any number of the most frequent buyers at really all levels, Sid. And Mandy Pope, who just can't be held back. She brought home Stop Charging Maria in full to Tappet. She also grabbed American Gal for $3 million. Stop Charging Maria, $4.4
million.
We saw Coolmore active. They Daddy's Little Darling comes to them. There's Scat Daddy yet again. $3.5 million. Was interesting. Constellation, the sale of Constellation in full to Curlin, Don Alberto, and they also brought home Salty, who they may race or they may breed. She's a 4-year-old quality road. Bridalwood bought Song of Bernadette, the productive mare, in full to Warfront. She's a 9-year-old, $2.3 million. Caledonia Road is going to head out of the country. A Raving Beauty is headed abroad. Then came the weanlings, and including the Mandy Pope. She not
1.9 only million.
Yeah, not only bought Stop Charging Maria, but she bought the baby too.
Yeah, now Cover Song was an RNA, wasn't she? For 3.9 million. That was Bobby Flay's mare. It was supposed to be from his dispersal. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think she was an RNA at 3.9 million. She was in full to Dabawi.
That was on. Was that Sunday?
At Faith Tipton.
Okay.
At Faith Tipton. Yeah. I don't know if she's. I don't have the list in front of me, which was really something. If that was the case, maybe Nicole can let you know, but. I was in the ring when that happened, and I was kind of stunned that it was first that there was a reserve on a mare that they were kind of dispersing, but more so the price.
We'll get that from Nicole next hour. Meld into Keeneland the last 2 days, and I thought that the Nyquist story yesterday and Larry Best among the names that just keeps piling on, and I thought that on Monday, how about Warfront being the covering stallion, Sid, on 5 of the top 7 purchases?
Yeah, that's it's just phenomenal. He just, elite stallion, and everybody wants one, and he gets the best mare. Every time I'm going through a pedigree for one of these sales, it's almost automatic. Whether it's a September yearling sale, his yearlings are out of some of the best mares, or at these mixed sales, some of the best mares are in full to him. And those pedigrees are, they're going to draw the money, and it's just phenomenal, really, the range of mares, too. I mean, they're all top-graded winners or deep, deep families, lots of Galileo mares. But some American race dirt mares now to them, too, as Bernie Sams and Walker Hancock have said that he's getting a lot of dirt mares, and they feel like he's been... His success came so early with turf that he hasn't really been able to find himself from under that turf reputation. But they feel, his first crop included the factor on dirt and that gelding that Claiborne raced that won over $800,000 on dirt as well. So they feel, he's got some dirt life in him as well. And, he's... his book is kept small compared to some of the other big commercial horses. There's also a lot of a demand for them. And, of course, they run in Europe. So, demand. He's got, you know, 19, 20, 21 grade one winners so far, grade one group one winners. And so he's got some phenomenal statistics. And it's very difficult to get into him.
Well, one of my other favorite false narratives that we get to poke holes in and beat with a stick is that international participants don't want our bloodstock. But yet, there was Katsumi Yoshida buying Tiffany's Honor for $2.2 million. And, oh, Shade Farm, they bought Zepesa for $1.25 million. And how about Shimakobe Farm? They bought Galileo Song. And, oh, here's Mr. Yoshida again buying Alluring Star. But just remember, our bloodstock not desired by the international marketplace.
Yeah, obviously, you know,
such false, so ridiculous.
You know, it's you know, it was obviously used by people to create fear. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, yes, it does.
To try to get a certain agenda in place. But if you look at even a lot of these ex-European fillies, Steve, that come from Europe, that might be Group 3 placed or whatever, Group 2 winners or Group 2 placed, they come here, they win graded races here, they win grade 1 races here, and because of the fact that they raced here and they got that, they then are sold to back to Europe or Japan or even here. Which tells you that racing here adds huge value to that filly's resume. And that's what buyers are coming to buy. And, you know, but the bottom line is most of these horses coming from Europe are racing on laces here. So, you know, that whole argument, you know, is nothing more than, you know, fear-mongering.
Well, can't really argue with the strategy. It seems to work well. The sale continues. We got today the second half of book two, Sid. And overall, I mean, what can you say? In summary, the marketplace really active and strong. And you know, these are top end. This is all premium stock, but still the. Seems like there's a big appetite out. The core group of buyers. Some final thoughts about the Breeders' Cup experience and the sales, you know, being on hand and just pressing the flesh.
I thoroughly enjoyed the Breeders' Cup, and you know, one of the highlights, of course, was to see Enable, and you know what a run that was with her and Magical in that race. Just really high quality racing, Steve. It was, you know, it was a lot of fun. Like you said, you know, obviously we didn't have the Justifies and others around, but we had plenty of high quality racing and lots of storylines within storylines. And you know, a lot of well-deserving winners. I'll just end this really quickly. I ran into a guy there who'd come, a guy I know from Twitter, and he brought three or four friends over. Kind of a successful young guy from California. He brought some friends over. I guess they just sold the company. They were having some fun. He's a big horse racing fanatic, but his three or four friends aren't. One of those friends, you know, he was flush with cash. He just kept, playing like one $2,000 win bets and $1,000 exactas, just playing the board favorites and kind of lower priced horses. He walked away with $100,000. Churchill Security helped escort his group out. His friend, by the way, the guy who had no racing or breeding or betting experience, he just kept winning and kept going. $100,000 in cash.
That's great. That's hysterical.
That's your throwing the dart blindly at the board and hitting, right?
But now he's hooked.
Yeah, he played the odds. You know, he played what essentially bettors liked. And he played combos of them, exactas and wins. And he had the, obviously he had the cash to bet $1,000 and $2,000 at a time. And my mouth dropped because I just met these guys after the races. I said, "What?"
That's great.
They wanted to take me out to dinner, and I said, "Look, go enjoy yourselves."
Well, the question is, are they coming back? Are they going to come back and participate more often?
In fact, they contacted me right away because they were interested in getting into the game to buy now. And I said, "Look,
that's great.
Take some time, enjoy yourself, and think very carefully about it before you take that step." But you know, it's a good thing you guys had a lot of fun, and that's the main thing.
Awesome. That's great. That's good. That's what it. Listen, you get people to the track, and they're going to have a good time, and they're going to be wowed by the experience, and that it's infectious at every level, whether the breeding side, the playing side, the you name it, ownership, every part of it is engaging. Sid, thanks so much. I appreciate it, and
we'll
start to. You got it. We'll also debate. Get Sid's thoughts about the categories as we get closer to the end of the year, including this fascinating Accelerate Justify Horse of the Year discussion. And Jay Privman, a perfect subject for him. He's going to join us next. We'll get Jay's post-Breeders' Cup report, then Nicole Russo, Seth Merrow, and more. Second half at the races, back after this.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
This is the house that funk builds. Groove Armada style. Come on.
breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. 20 minutes to the top of the hour. Jay Bribman tracks the Triple Crown, of course, for the Daily Racing Form as the national correspondent. And then the scene shifts after Triple Crown toward the Breeders' Cup Classic. And we discussed it weekly leading into Saturday. Then we discussed it right ahead of the big race. And Jay Pribman joins us from the Daily Racing Forum. Jay, that was kind of a special ending to really two just perfect kinds of days of racing.
Yeah, and good morning, Steve. It really was a terrific Breeders' Cup. The quality of racing was great. It was just up to the midweek weather was so abominable. At least the weather was great for Saturday. It was perfect fall weather. It was a little blustery on Friday. Obviously, the turf course condition took a beating from the weather, and that, I'm sure, impacted some of the races. But overall, it was, an artistic success. And one thing I think has gone under-addressed is that it was very safe racing. There was not one incident where anybody needed to be taken away in the horse ambulance. So I think kudos all around to all the people involved from Churchill Downs and the Breeders' Cup for putting on a really nice return to Churchill Downs for a Breeders' Cup. And the results were reflective of an event held on neutral ground. You had winners from the East Coast, West Coast, and Europe. And there wasn't a home field advantage really for anybody, and that part of it was really, really refreshing.
That's a great point, and we'll head back to the West Coast next year, and not circle back until Keeneland. But from that standpoint, that's a good angle, and that also includes the one turn mile, which it was really the intent when the Breeders' Cup included that concept, as a new race, and you really get it. You get what the intention was when we can run it like on that configuration.
Yeah, it's a better race that way. It's just a fairer race on a mile racetrack. It's just such an abrupt run to the first turn at Santa Anita or Del Mar or when it was at Monmouth. It's just a better race going a one turn mile, and you only get that at places like Churchill Downs or the Breeders' Cup can finally get back to Belmont Park. You can do it there.
Jay, let's start with we'll start with the headline, and you've covered John Sadler for many years, and he has been so stoic about the record coming in, and this was his last shot in 2018. Accelerate and Joel Rosario, your impressions?
Yeah, it was really kind of a perfect ending to the weekend because he was really starting to get beat up anew. He came into the weekend 0-41 and had lost three races earlier on the card, including a brutal beat with Catapult, who, I mean, that would have made anybody think, God, am I ever going to win a Breeders' Cup race, the way he got nailed in the last couple strides by Expert Eye after firing like that. You know, Catalina Cruiser was awful. Selcourt was awful. So he was down to his last chance with Accelerate, and Accelerate came through again, as he did six out of seven times this year. His only time he got beat was against City of Light, who beat him a neck in the Oakland Handicap, and we certainly saw the quality of City of Light, how good a horse he is, by the way he won the Dirt Mile. But it was a nice win for Sadler, and it was a nice scene. You know, you were in the paddock watching the race down there with near where myself and Mike Welsh were watching the race, because it seemed like the right spot. You're going to be covering the story to watch the race, because both Sadler and Baffert were watching the race from the paddock. They had three of the top contenders in terms of horses covered in Accelerate and West Coast and McKinsey, and it made for a nice scene to try and write about in my race recap story, just to have seen the way the reaction went down of those, all the principals involved, Sadler, Baffert, Costa Ronis. It was, so it was, as Sadler said as he was walking through the tunnel, if he thought about it too hard or talked about it more, he was going to start to cry, because it meant a lot to him, but he was trying to keep a stiff upper lip.
Before we talk about what it means to the principals, from a race standpoint, the way the race unfolded, what went right, what went wrong, your thoughts on the way in which the race ran.
Well, as I discussed on your show last week, I mean, there were a lot of people who were wringing their hands over Accelerate getting the outside post. And as I said on your show, it's like if you had post 14 in the Kentucky Derby, you'd be thrilled. So to me, 14 going a mile and a quarter at Churchill Downs is a great spot, and he got a nice clean trip from out there. He was wide, but it was fine. He was in the clear, and he didn't get some of the horses down inside, like Lone Sailor and Catholic Boy just got murdered the first 16th of a mile of the race because it was just so much bumping and traffic down inside, which is similar to what happens in the Derby where there's even more horses. So I thought Accelerate got a nice trip, and so Mendelssohn carved out a pretty hot pace again. McKenzie and West Coast were in, I thought, ideal striking positions and just failed to go on with it. And Accelerate continued on with it. And he was able to hold off the runs of Gunavera, who ran a good race to get up and finish second. And I thought Yoshida ran a decent race on the dirt. And Thunderstone took advantage of his post, and he had good tactical speed and kind of followed Mendelssohn around there the whole way and got through. He never left the fence. It was a pretty clean trip for him, and he was third best on the day.
Did you get a chance in recap discussions and as the dust settled to hear what the Godolphin, the Saeed bin Sarur and O'Brien camps, their satisfaction level, Jay, with their attempts to work their way, toward this elusive goal. And of course, Godolphin able 72 hours later to win themselves a Melbourne Cup, another prize that they've been after, Charlie Appleby on Tuesday.
Yeah, it was a pretty terrific weekend for Charlie Appleby.
Yeah.
winning with Line of Duty and then to win that race, to win the Melbourne Cup, and he was there for it, and he flew down and made the race. So it was a pretty special weekend for that. No, but to the specifics of your question, no. I mean, I did not talk to either Aiden O'Brien, who was not there Sunday morning, or Sweep and Soror. I was more focused on trying to deal with the horses that I know are staying in America and running in America for follow-up stuff, whether they were going to run in America or be retired. Mendelssohn's going to stud. Thunderstone's going back to Dubai, but I didn't specifically talk to either of those trainers. I was
cool.
More focused on getting with Sadler and Baffert's team.
And expand on this. Obviously, is going to meld into a horse of the year discussion that is frankly enraged already. And you addressed some thoughts and Sadler's piece and Baffert's in all of this.
Well. I think just about everybody else thought on the night of the Belmont Stakes that obviously Justify is unquestionably going to be the horse of the year. And, Accelerate put together a campaign that I think merits looking at. And one of the reasons I wrote the follow-up story I did, where I always do this every year, I write, okay, where do the Eclipse Awards stand after the Breeders' Cup? It's just a standard story that I do coming out of the Breeders' Cup. But you could tell within minutes after the Classic and then over the next day or so, that there was already a fairly animated pitched discussion over the merits of Justify versus Accelerate for Horse of the Year, and I thought it demanded that it be the lead to the piece because it's really a true apples and oranges comparison of a horse who had a comet-like campaign, six starts in 112 days and Triple Crown and winning the Kentucky Derby without racing at two for the first time since Apollo in 1882, becoming only the 13th Triple Crown winner and cramming that all into such a short amount of time. It was an incredible feat, but he was gone by then. He was retired not long after, and Accelerate ran through the course of the calendar year. Beat older horses, whereas the three-year-old crop that Justify beat has looked weaker and weaker as the year has gone on. And so I think to just dismiss Accelerate as a Horse of the Year candidate just out of hand is foolish. I mean, you need to at least give it a second look. And you may still come back to saying, hey, it doesn't matter. Triple Crown trumps all, and he is the Horse of the Year. And I understand that argument. But I don't think you should just dismiss what Accelerate did when sitting down and saying, all right, who should be voted on for Horse of the Year? I think Justify will still win, but I think there will be a healthy amount of support for Accelerate, and I think it's going to be a closer vote than people might have thought, certainly back in June, and even more so now. And I thought it was worth addressing that, along with all the other categories, some of which are pretty easy to tell who's going to win. For instance, obviously Justify will be three-year-old male, and Accelerate will be older male. But there are other categories that are real, real tough toss-ups. Female turf. You go Enable off the one start, International Superstar, or Sister Charlie, who won four Grade Ones this year, both of whom won Breeders' Cup races. I mean, that's a tough call, as is the two-year-old filly category between Jaywalk and Newspaper of Record, either of whom are worthy Eclipse Award candidates. And then you get to categories like male turf, where you just hold your nose to who to vote for, because there's just nothing that's really that stands out. And I made a real off-the-wall suggestion in my story regarding male turf. You know, I think Stormy Liberal deserves to be looked at in that category. Mm-hmm. And again, that's another one where people are going to go, like, analogous to Horse of the Year. Well, I mean, Triple Crown trumps all. It doesn't matter. It's over. It's Justify. I won't even take a look at what Accelerate did. And I think there's probably a similar reaction to consideration for Stormy Liberal. But he's a back-to-back Breeders' Cup turf winner. He won a Grade One. He won the last four starts. Had the highest buyer speed figure of the weekend of any horse that won a race. And in a year where nothing stood out, it'd be different. You know, obviously we want to that category tends to reward milers or mile-and-a-half type horses, but in a year where nobody stood out in either of those categories, I don't think it's unreasonable to consider Stormy Liberal as a candidate in that category. And that was one of the things that the essay I wrote addressed, was like, this is a year where voters need to maybe think a little more wider than the rigidity with which they often bring to the process.
I agree, and I even with Peter Miller yesterday, I trying to find a reward for Stormy Liberal, and I said, you know, which of your two sprinters would be more, you know, arguably, I mean, Stormy Liberal. You might say the resume is every bit as attractive as Roy H's, I mean, in, you know, head to head. But you come up with a even a better twist on what to do with him, because I know that, you know, this has been tough. This has been a tough case to make historically. People don't seem to be open to those kinds of ideas. I mean, hell, they weren't even open to Lady Eli as the 2-year-old filly of the year 3 years ago.
Well, that to me was one of the great. For Take Charge Brandy to win over Lady Eli was just, I mean, and that's one of the things I'm trying to bring up and have people think about in these stories, is that just sometimes people vote by rote, and it's like, you need to be a little more sensible. Now, at least this year for two-year-old filly, at least in the case of Jaywalk, you've got a two-time Grade One winner who was dominant in her race, and you know, so she is clearly the best of the dirt runners among the two-year-old fillies, and she was dominant in her race. She ran a faster time than Game Winner did in the juvenile. I mean, she is a worthy candidate, but so is Newspaper of Record. I mean, her three wins were all overpowering. She crushed that field on Friday in the Philly turf race. And I think you need to, I think it's a harder uphill climb for Newspaper of Record this year, only because you've got a much stronger candidate in Jaywalk. But I thought it was really one of the poor decisions of the Eclipse Award voting block in recent years that Lady Eli did not win the 2-year-old filly championship a few years ago. She was clearly the best 2-year-old filly of that group, and couldn't beat a mediocre horse who just happened to pull off an upset on a wacky track in the juvenile fillies and came back and beat an anemic field in the Starlet at LaSalle. And off those two wins and a less than 50% win record got a championship over a Hall of Famer, as it turned out. it's just incomprehensible to me.
Yep. I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Still plenty of racing, and there are some grade ones, of course, between now and the end of the year, and we always suggest to everybody that votes to make sure you wait until all those races are run. You don't have to turn in your ballot the day the balloting starts. Jay, some overall further thoughts and what this meant for Sadler and Joel Rosario's Breeders' Cup, another sidebar, and for the Ronis brothers, we had Costa on Monday. I mean, just they have been such a welcome addition to the ownership landscape, not just in California but nationwide.
You know, the Ronises are now the leaders in terms of purse earnings among owners this year, and I think they would be very deserving of an Eclipse Award for champion owner, because they're going to have at the least the champion older male in Accelerate. They're going to have a Horse of the Year finalist in Accelerate. They had a graded stake winner, graded stakes winners from a number of other horses, including Selcourt, Catalina Cruiser, Shenandoah Queen, horses like that. They had a very strong campaign, and I think they would be more than worthy of winning, and I think that Breeders' Cup race puts them there. You know, Irad Ortiz has probably had the strongest overall body of work among riders this year, and he had a strong Breeders' Cup weekend to enhance his chances of being this year's Eclipse Award winner and following in the footsteps of his brother last year. But Rosario, you know, he's done well on the East Coast. Obviously, the move back there helped him win the Kentucky Derby with Orb a few years ago, but he just seems like he clicks better with West Coast-based horsemen, and he's going to come back out here and ride, at least through the winter, and Game Winner will be a major reason for him to be out here. He'll obviously ride Accelerate in his final start in the Pegasus, and it'll be good to have him back out here. He was dominant out here when he rode here, and it was just opportunity that sent him east in terms of being able to get on better horses. But the landscape has kind of changed back there for the winter, and the opportunities out here are pretty strong, and I think getting into the Baffert barn, among other barns. He's obviously in good with Sadler. I think he'll potentially have some opportunity with Hollendorfer. He'll be a welcome addition to the crew out here, and I think you'll see him have a very, very strong winter campaign. And he was the riding star of the weekend. Even though on points, Ortiz ended up winning the Shoemaker Award, I thought overall Rosario had just a fantastic weekend.
I agree. Jay, hit on some of the other stories that stuck with you. We've been flogging Enable really as the maybe.
Well, no, that's the best adjective to use, Steve.
Well,
but go on.
Well, as a story, to me, that, you know, that is the moment that really and her coming and being the breakthrough ARC winner to win a turf, that was terrific. You know, the juvenile races we've touched on with Jaywalk and Game Winner, but you know, kind of walk through the 2 days and as the you know, as the Breeders' Cup flowed through, the moments and the things that stuck with you.
Well, Enable's race was fantastic. I mean, that was just a great thing to see in person, to see the tactics that Aidan O'Brien's tag team tried to use to get her beat, and for her to still overcome that on a clever ride from DeTore, who went out to where the better ground was, way out beyond the middle of the crown of the course. Just watching him and Ryan Moore go at it was really one of the thrills of the weekend for me. They're world-class riders, and to see the way they approached that race and did everything they could to beat one another was just really thrilling. And to see Enable come over and win the race, and, you know, two-time ARC winner to win the turf, and just to be sporting on the part of her connections to come over and run over here. She didn't need to prove anything. I mean, she's already a two-time ARC winner, but I thought it was great for her to come over here. I was thrilled for John Gosden, who won the British Championship this year, and July 1st covered when he first started out in California in the early 1980s, back, you know, when he had Bates Motel and horses of that nature. And he was the winner of the very first Breeders' Cup with Royal Heroine. So to see the kind of career that he's had, and for him to be represented by Enable and to see her come over and win like that was great. And the other race that really stood out for me, Steve, of the ones that we haven't yet covered, was the Distaff, because I thought Monomoy Girl really ran a bang-up race and finished off a championship campaign like a champion. She won his best. She has had a terrific year. She's going to be more than worthy of winning that three-year-old filly title. She ran all year long in all the best races, one-turn miles like the Acorn Kentucky Oaks, and then beating her elders in the Distaff on Saturday. That was because there's just so many big races. That was over. It didn't get as much play as I think it should have. It got play because of, you know, she's going to be probably the third horse of the year finalist, I would guess, besides Justify and Accelerate. But I think her campaign and what she accomplished this year was pretty special as well, and to see the way she won that Distaff, being up on the engine the whole way and then holding off the late runners like Wildcat, that was another really terrific performance on a weekend where we saw quite a few of them.
Well, and the format, the Juvenile Friday seemed to kind of work. It seemed to have kind of universal positive review.
It was great. It was an appropriate way to package all that stuff. It made a lot of sense. I thought everybody was happy with the way those races came off. And the other thing that it did by running those races there is it put the Distaff back on Saturday, which is where it belongs. It used to be the main event on the Friday card, which is fine, but that's a race that deserves to be on the Saturday card. And so it's back on the Saturday card, and it was terrific for it to be there. And I thought it was smart and appropriate to just package those 5 2-year-old races together as that Future Stars Friday. I thought it all worked really, really well.
Well, a lot of fun, and after, you know, had concerns about, you know, the conditions, the turf course actually, I thought, muddled through admirably, and of course the main track always seems to snap into shape. It's miraculous, and no matter how much rain comes, and it was a satisfying Breeders' Cup on a lot of levels, I thought.
I agree. I mean, there were just a lot of really terrific performances, and I like that as we were saying at the beginning of the segment, that the wealth of success was spread equitably among West Coast, East Coast, and Europe. I mean, that tells you that they were running on in conditions that were fair to all, and that there wasn't really a home court edge. And that's something that I think is you're striving for. It's not always achieved, and it certainly was met this past weekend.
Well, the one thing I just realized, the one thing that I didn't give you a chance to applaud, Michael McCarthy gets his first Breeders' Cup win, and there's going to be more.
Yes, there will be more. I mean, here's a guy who's got 30 horses in his barn, and 1/6 of them were at the Breeders' Cup. He had five
runners. It's amazing.
And City of Light won to give him his first win, and that was terrific. You know, Vibrance ran certainly a respectable third in the Juvenile Fillies race behind Jaywalk and Restless Rider. And she'll come back in the Starlet at Los Alamitos next month. But he's certainly a man on the rise, and deservingly so. He's put in his time. He's been on his own now for nearly 5 years after apprenticing under Pletcher for 11 years and, you know, coming back out to California, which is where he grew up, and has his family here. It was hard for him for a while. I mean, he was away for a good chunk of the year while he was working for Pletcher from his wife and daughter, and there were just various reasons, that foremost, for him to get back to California and start on his own. And it's been really fun to see him get to the level that he's at now and hopefully continue to ascend, because he puts in the time. He's a terrific trainer. He's a great guy. I've known him before he was before. I mean, I knew him back when he was working as an assistant to Doug Peterson and Ben Cecil, before he even worked for Fletcher. And he's always just had, he's been a guy that I think people have had on their radar for a long time. I mean, Ron Anderson, who is now Joel Rosario's agent, he was the one who brought McCarthy to the attention of Fletcher and helped him get that job all those years ago now, 15, 16 years ago. So there have been a lot of people who have taken note of the potential that Michael McCarthy had, and it's proving out now for sure.
And, you know, it occurs to me with this conversation that I can bring it up with you. I'm sure Hammer will mention it, and I haven't reached out to Jack Sisterson myself yet. But Jack Sisterson gets his first graded stake win on his own. He saddled some with his name in the program, but he gets a big price win at Aqueduct. I was happy for Jack Sisterson, too.
Long-time no, he's got some great opportunities now with Calumet, so that was a neat thing for Jack after putting in a lot of time with the O'Neill barn before getting this opportunity.
Absolutely. Jay, I appreciate everything, of course, and we will catch up. This is Friday's visit on Wednesday, and we'll talk very soon, and I'll be headed back out going to the University of Arizona for the symposium, and we'll broadcast from there, and then have another starlit futurity trip planned for the Los Al meet.
Very good. We will see you out here next month.
Excellent. Jay Privman, everybody. DRF Privman. And America's Turf Authority since?
Before Marty McGee was born.
Thanks, Jay. I appreciate it. Lots of fun. Jay Privman, everybody. We'll take a timeout a little past the top of the hour. Nicole Russo from the Daily Racing Forum is going to follow colleague Jay Privman. We'll get Nicole's take on the first 3 days of sales activity. She had a busy couple of weeks getting ready for Breeders' Cup. She covered the distaff for the paper and then had to quickly get ready for Sunday night and everything else that's gone on. Monday, Tuesday, and later, actually, in the next hour, they continue with the horse sale at Keeneland. Nicole Russo next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.